Mr. George Keane, Rail 7. Now, what happened after the evacuation of Crete then, Mr. Keane?
Well, we took part in a variety of operations, including running stores into Tobruk when it was surrounded, and various forays with the fleet, doing bombardments on ports and occupied by the Germans in the Western Desert. And the next thing which I can think of as being somewhat notable took place at the end of December. This is 1941, isn't it? End of December.
Yeah.
We had been out on a sweep with the fleet, and we returned to Alexandria Harbour. And we entered harbour in the middle watch on the 19th, after the main force had already returned. We had heard that there was intelligence that Italian frogmen were going to make an attack on the harbour. And as we entered the harbour, we did see motorboats going round dropping £10 charges to endeavour to put off anybody who might have been there. We went upon entering harbour, we went straight alongside an oiler called the Laguna and tied up bows to her stern, and another of our flotilla secured on our port side, so that we were sandwiched between the oiler and the other member of our flotilla. I had the morning watch, which was from 4 o'clock till 8 o'clock, and it was light in Alexandria Harbour about, I think it was about 5 o'clock, and at 6 o'clock it was broad daylight, and I'd heard a loud bang. I was sat on top of the what we call the signalman's table, making routine signals to our depot ship, the Woolwich, and while doing so I heard a loud bang coming from the directions of the battleships, and on looking round I saw the masts of one of them shaking. I did not take too much notice of this and continued making their signals. While doing so, there was an enormous explosion from the stern of the oiler alongside us, and our bows shot up in the air. I was hurled off the signalman's table into a corner of the bridge, and when I picked myself up, this column of water was coming down on the ship, and I realised that the stern of the oiler had been blown off. Immediately afterwards, the captain came running on the bridge in his pyjamas. When we'd been coming into harbour at about 2 o'clock in the morning, only the duty part of the watch had been on deck, and as far as some of the lads still in their hammocks down below were concerned, we were still at sea, and the thought of him being torpedoed, so there was a bit of a commotion going on down below, and the crew of the oiler were Chinese, and you can just imagine the commotion with them running around the deck shouting out in Chinese, some of them jumping over the side. Our flotilla mate on our port side cast off, and the explosion had blown in all the plating on our starboard bow and wrecked the forepeak, which contained the paint store. In the paint store were stowed tins of calcium carbide, which were used for fitting in the heads of torpedoes when used for practice firing, so that at the end of their run they floated, and in the daytime you saw the smoke, and at night time you could see a flame, and then they could be picked up and recovered. Consequently, the water pouring in set the carbide off, and the carbide caught fire, set fire to the paint store, and there we were on fire. And the part of the ship where I lived had disappeared. Once again, I lost everything that I had. We immediately went out to the usual buoy we tied up on and got the fire put out. The result of this was we had to go into Gabari Dock. That's a dry dock and in the end of the harbour for repairs to do which dockyard mateys were flown in from Malta. And at one point in the repairs, there was a rumour going round that we were going to be taking out the dock and going to sea, and the workmen were going to pack up and leave the ship, at which the captain confronted them, told them their job wasn't very good, and that he'd got orders that the first man that left his job would be shot. And therefore, the engineer officer had a couple of his stoker's armour revolvers sitting there watching the workmen do their job. My part of the ship, my mess in the ship had been wrecked, and we were going to be in dock for quite a lengthy repair. I and several others, including my particular mate on the ship, were given the opportunity to go to Cairo for a few days as guests of the Gezira Sporting Club on a houseboat on the Nile. My mate in Cairo on New Year's Eve, I think there was about 30 of us sailors and about 30,000 soldiers and RAF men. And the way in which everybody was thoroughly engaged in getting drunk, I was of the opinion that if a Rommel had made his big push down the desert on that night, he would have gone straight through Alexandria into Cairo. My recollections of that night are a bit vague now, but I do remember that we went into a cabaret where there was a mass of soldiers and RAF men, and one of our party was dancing on the stage with a potted palm, at which the old lady who was in charge of the cabaret sent for the military police, and we quickly disappeared through a back door, eventually joining up with a party of Australians. And by about 4 o'clock in the morning, when we were dancing on the tables in a cafe, the military police came and threw us all out, at which stage we decided to catch a taxi back to the houseboat. And it wasn't until about midday on Christmas Day that we were roused by one of the Egyptian servants with a...
Christmas Day or New Year's Day?
It was Christmas Eve we were there.
Okay,
yeah, Christmas Day. One of the Egyptian servants with a pot of tea at about midday. And I'm afraid that the marvellous Christmas dinner that was put on for us was not fully appreciated because we were suffering from the effects of the night before. However, on Boxing Day, we went to have a look round Cairo. And my mate and I ended up in the Museum of Hygiene. And we were confronted by a glass case in which were two livers. One was a wax replica of a normal liver, and the other one of a liver suffering from cirrhosis. This made a big impression upon us, and for the next two or three days before we went out to the ship, we never had a drink. One casualty of the explosion was the Christmas cake that I'd made. I'd always fancied myself at a bit of cooking, and of course Alexandria being a modern city, working city, you could obtain anything you wanted. And I got all the necessary ingredients, and I made this Christmas cake about 2 foot square for the lads of our mess, iced it, and unfortunately it was blown to pieces in the explosion. From then on we got into 1942. As we got into the months of 1942, we continued with, once we were fully repaired and taken out of the dock, we continued various operations, far too many for me to remember in detail and describe here, until the 10th of May, when, with three other destroyers, Jackal, Kipling and Lively, we were sent off on an operation to intercept a reported southbound Italian escorted convoy of three German and one Italian supply ships bound for Benghazi. The captain had orders that we had to turn back if we were sighted by enemy aircraft. Usually, about an hour out of Alexandria Harbour, we'd get sighted by a German reconnaissance aircraft, but on this particular day, we didn't. And we had been steaming for the convoy was supposed to be going from an Italian port to Benghazi in North Africa with stores, etc., and men for Rommel's army. On this occasion, we were not spotted by reconnaissance aircrafts as early as we usually were, and it wasn't until in the late afternoon, after our escort of bow fighters had left us and we were without any air cover, that I saw an aircraft go between two clouds, and I recognised it as a Ju-88, and I shouted out to the captain that had seen it, and he asked me if I was absolutely certain as to what it was, an enemy aircraft, and I said yes, whereupon we turned the ships round to go back to Alexandria. My notes of this particular episode say that obeying his operational orders, Captain D-14 at 1640 reversed course and with us destroyers in a loose diamond formation set course at high speed for Alexandria. Unfortunately, not long after we had turned and on our way back, the first Ju-87s arrived from Crete airfields, and they were an especially trained anti-ship squadron. The
what do you don't worry about what the book says. What do you remember of what happened?
This is what I remember. I can remember this what happened. Yeah. So I'm trying to find which was the first ship to be hit.
Doesn't matter. What do you remember?
It's the Lively. I think. They were very persistent in their first in the first attack, and they were coming. I think he's got the wrong aircraft in here.
No, you tell it how you remember it.
Yeah, Ju-88s. What about the bit I've already said?
Just tell us what it...
Right. The German aircraft that arrived were Ju-88s, specially trained for attacking ships. And they flew at us at about 25 foot above the water. And bombs were literally going through our wireless aerials. The first ship that was hit was the Lively. It was hit with bombs just far to the bridge. and the whole of the front of the ship disappeared, and she just turned over with her screws still rotating. The Kipling was the next one hit, and she sank fairly rapidly. And the Jackal was also hit and set on fire, leaving us on our own, unscratched. We threw everything that would float over the side amongst the men in the water, and shouted out to them that we'd come back and pick them up as soon as the sun went down, as it was obvious that if we hung around amongst the survivors and we were bombed again, a lot of them were going to be killed by bombing. So we set off about 5 miles from the scene of this disaster, and we were attacked on one or two occasions again ourselves, but fortunately our captain was very, very good at dodging bombs, and we weren't hit. When darkness came, we crept back towards the survivors in the water, and the Germans had left one aircraft behind, and that attacked us in the dark and just missed us with a couple of bombs well ahead. We went into the middle of survivors, and I went as a signalman in the whaler to help pick up survivors, and some of them were in a very bad way, and it was I suppose these days you'd just say it was very traumatic when you were trying to pick up men out of the water, soaked in oil, screaming because of broken limbs, etc. And the last man that we picked up, he was very lucky really, because he's quite a way away from the main mass of survivors. And we heard this voice singing, and we found this one man floating on a buoy, B-U-O-Y, floating on a buoy that somehow had got thrown over the side, knocked over the side when one of the ships went down. The Jackal was still on fire, still afloat on fire, so we torpedoed her and sank her. Admiral Cunningham had mustered the whole of the Mediterranean fleet and sent it out to sea to escort us back in, as we were packed with so many men that the weight made the, as described by the captain, we had so much extra weight on board that we could not put the rudder over and make a sharp turn. We had to be very, very careful how the ship was handled. And when we got back to Alexandria, and all of our survivors were sent ashore, then we had to clean the ship, which was covered. Most of the mess decks were covered in oil fuel, which had come aboard with the survivors.
This was the 16th of May, did you say?
19th. Where are we? No, it's the 10th of May.
10th of May, sorry.
10th of May, yeah.
And had it affected you? This, it does sound rather traumatic, having to pull these lads aboard.
Well, I was very fortunate. I always seem to... is this going back on the tape?
Yes.
I was very lucky. I always seem to be able to take these things in my stride after a while. The only thing that I've ever thought about occasionally in the years that have gone past was when I witnessed the Barham blow up. Battleship Barham.
You mentioned that had a big effect.
I have mentioned, yes. And I always thought of men being in the inside of the ship part when she went down that hadn't been killed in the explosion. But this business was we had Been in back in harbour for a couple of days, I think it was Admiral Vane that came on board, and instead of being somewhat sympathetic to what has happened, the ship was criticised for poor gunnery and not shooting any of the aircraft down. I remember that, because we didn't think much of it.
So what's the next incident you remember? I know you're picking various.
I'm just picking out, you see. I can't describe everything.
It was
so much. Where do we go? The next big operation in which Jarvis was engaged was covering a convoy to Malta when it was attacked by the Italian fleet in what was called the Second Battle of Sirte. But I missed this. It's the only convoy from Alexandria to Malta in which I didn't sail in Jarvis as an escort, as I was sent ashore to what had been King Farouk's stables at Ras El Tin, which had been converted into a signal school. And there I did a course towards promotion in for Yeomanry Signals.
Anything about the course?
The course was very concentrated, and it made quite a nice how was I going to put it? To my nice change from being bounced about at sea and shot at every day. I was quite. I passed my course, and upon returning on board, was swiftly promoted to Yeoman of Signals.
Did that make a big difference? Being a yeoman of,
yeoman was petty officer rank. Yes, petty officer rank. Oh yes, it made a big difference, particularly as eventually. Not long after, as it led to me leaving the ship, which I'll come to in a minute. What was the next thing we were in for? Next thing I think was when we got chucked out of Port Said.
What happened there?
That's when Rommel came down the desert. After my promotion to Yeoman of Signals, we took part in various operations, too numerous really to describe, until we had to evacuate Alexandria as General Rommel and his German forces were rapidly advancing down the desert towards Alexandria. We left Alexandria and became based on Port Said. And the operations that we took place in from Port Said while I was still on the ship was mostly along the coast towards Beirut. I knew that my relief had been nominated and was on one of the other ships. And for a couple of weeks, this particular ship was met leaving harbour just as we were going in. Until one night when we were in harbour, on the at 2 a.m. on the 27th of August, 1942, I was roused from my hammock and told that my relief had arrived on board. After 3 years and 4 months in the ship, I rapidly packed my bag and hammock, and the boat took me ashore and I was sent to an army camp up the desert near to Suez, to await further transport home.
This is August 42?
Yes, August 42. To home.
Now, what about the trip home?
After being in this rough camp for 2 or 3 weeks, I was sent on board to travel to South Africa as a passenger on board the Dutch liner New Amsterdam. There was plenty of beer on board, but fortunately the Dutch crew drank most of it, and the only thing we had available was spirits, which didn't go down very well down the Red Sea. Now then, we can leave that book now. We arrived in Durban 4 or 5 days later, where I transshipped. Wait a minute. I've got to recollect this properly. We were sent ashore. I was sent ashore to a local base. I was nominated to travel, to continue travelling home in the liner Duchess of Athol. But for some reason or other, that was cancelled, and which was fortunate for me, as the Duchess of Athol was torpedoed and sunk up off the Horn of Africa, and survivors floated around lifeboats for quite a long time. Instead, I was sent to Cape Town, where I joined, as a passenger, I joined with some 80 other chiefs and petty officers, the liner Orcades, for transshipment straight to the United Kingdom. Unfortunately, the day after we sailed, we'd reached a position some 400 miles off Cape Town when we were torpedoed by a German submarine and sunk.
Now, what do you remember of that?
My memories of that particular day are that it was a very efficient ship, because it was Navy run, and there were quite a large number of soldiers, airmen and women and children on board, as well as us, this little band of chiefs and petty officers. And I was sharing a cabin up on the promenade deck on the starboard side of the ship with three others, and I distinctly remember the time the first torpedo struck, because I was on my hands and knees raking under my bunk to try and find my cup to go and draw my rum ration.
And what was the date? Do you know? Was it September?
I can give you the date if you...
We'd better make progress. If you don't remember, you don't...
No, I've got the date in the book in there.
They can look it up.
Right. No, where are we?
We
mustered on deck alongside the lifeboats, and here I think a mistake had been made as regards the disposition of us chiefs and petty officers. Instead of distributing us throughout so many in each lifeboat, we were all put in the same lifeboat. Another torpedo hit us, and then the order came to abandon ship. We had modern lifeboats, and although it was blowing half a gale, we were quite successful in launching ours with no trouble at all. Unfortunately, one lifeboat was turned over, and some engine room crew and nursing sisters were lost. However, we didn't know anything about this at the time, as we were too busy looking after ourselves, picking up oranges out of the sea. The first torpedo had hit one of the holds full of oranges, and we didn't know how long we'd be floating around, so we tried to fill our boat with oranges. We were very closely packed together,